Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Welcome to Talking Comics, episode 253. I'm your host, Mara Wood, and I'm here with Bob Ryer.
253? That's impossible.
Steve Say.
Hello.
And Joey Pricino.
Hi, everybody.
Oh, man.
You sound so small and far away.
Yeah.
I'm gonna distance myself even further. Can you hear me now? I'm rolling away.
How about now?
Oh,
oh my God.
Oh, wow.
Batman? Batman, is that you?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's Kevin Conroy. I'm really like aiming for that whatever. Batman radio play. When's that coming, guys?
We have to do one of those. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we were just chatting before we started recording about New York and the debates and all of this kind of stuff. So I think we got all our feistiness out of us before even starting. I know I'm worn out from yesterday.
It's been an interesting week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I announced on Twitter today I'm going to be going to New York Comic Con.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. First time going to this convention. It's
going to
be.
You're not just going to the convention. You're doing a panel.
Yeah. I'm on a panel for Science of Star Wars. Because, you know, I can't get enough Star Wars. So.
Yeah, but you're going to rock it. We just have to figure out what time we'll get everyone there.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have signs in the back.
Yes.
In the back, in the front.
No, we have to cover the room, Joe. We got to cover the room.
Yes.
All right, you space them out, I guess. Yes. I get it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, I know
absolutely.
Bob is going to the con and Steve's going to con. Joey, are you going to the convention as well?
All right, you're gonna just put me out there.
I just
throw you under the bus.
Just asking.
This is your punishment.
No, man. I'm not gonna make it. I always have school, and I'm at the school on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. It's just I never get tickets. And then you sent out that message saying you were going to the con, and I was like, she's literally coming from Arkansas to go to the con, and I live literally 20 minutes away.
Right, you could walk there in like 40.
How are our listeners going to take you seriously then?
The river.
You know? That's okay. We will definitely sort something out for an after party somewhere, and we'll have the details as we figure it out.
We're going to give you a fake address.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. We'll go to someplace different. I know. We've had, I got to say, over the years we've done this from the very beginning. Look, you're engaged to a young lady because of Talking Comics after party kind of thing.
That is true.
In a way. Yeah. So
that is very Dutch.
We will sort out. We've had some lovely conversations, met some great people, had some good beer and sandwiches here and there.
Mm-hmm.
We'll make sure as we get closer to this, we'll let everyone know. Steve.
The best chicken and waffles of my life happened at Comic-Con. Was it the year before last? Because we went last year and they got a new chef. It broke my heart.
Yeah.
It broke
my heart.
I
was going to say, let's go to that place because I love chicken and waffles.
So do I.
It's the Algonquin Hotel.
I have eaten a lot of chicken and I have eaten even more waffles in my life.
Right? So the idea of putting them together.
And it had like, what was it? Like some kind of like strawberry butter syrup puree thing. And it was so good.
Mm. It's the Algonquin Hotel.
Yes.
We could do that. Mm. We can do that. That's never a problem. What about the one year we went to Special Edition, a walk through Foley Square?
Oh, the grilled cheese place?
The grilled cheese
place. I best love grilled cheese.
Sandwich.
Yo.
Oh,
so much.
Boy.
I can't drink out on the street.
A milk cheese sandwich?
I love blue cheese grilled cheese.
Whoa, that sounds weird.
Like start no, like throwing great. A couple of different cheeses on it, put some mayonnaise on the bread and just right, fry it up, a little bit of bacon.
Yeah, bacon.
Yeah.
The bacon is, but you just flew way out of my wheelhouse there. That blue cheese and mayonnaise on a grilled cheese, man, that's ridiculous.
No, it's great. I had people at our local pub where actually our fifth anniversary, we're doing a little bit of a, not an event, but we're going to do a dinner for five kind of deal upstairs at Reese's 1900. And they have a grilled cheese, bacon and tomato sandwich. Mm. What kind of cheese would you like? I want blue cheese.
Yep.
Mm. And no, it was awesome. It was a gooey mess and I had to eat it with a knife and fork. Oh man,
Joey, do you not like blue cheese in general?
I don't like blue cheese universally. I don't like blue cheese. I don't like feta cheese. All other cheeses, I don't care what color it is, I'll eat it. But
what if I made you like a smoked Gouda and pepper jack?
Oh, that's delicious. That sounds good. Now you're talking about. Now you're back. I'm back with you now.
Yeah. All right.
We've got a gourmet grilled cheese place, one in Fayetteville and one in Rogers, and they make a sandwich called the Chibaca. Which nice. I always order because it's called the Chibaca, but it's got like pulled pork on it and bacon, like
my God.
Two or three different types of cheeses.
My first dinner date with Bronwyn when I first visited Canada for New Year's, the first time we were together, we went to this place called Relish that was down the road from her, and it was my first time having a burger that the patties were grilled cheese bacon and grilled cheese sandwiches.
What?
Oh, you're killing me now, guys. Yeah. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Sweet potato fries, beer. Mm, oh, yeah. So good. She was wooing me.
You've got to bring a Chibaca up with you.
I need to figure out how to make it. I need to
don't come through customs.
Yeah, they'll shut me down. Also, no, it might get kind of gross.
It's all New York.
Ma'am, what are you doing with that grilled cheese sandwich? Nothing.
So, I mean, look, I'm so bummed I can't come to the con. I think it's so awesome that Mara's going to be there, but we have to get together after.
Absolutely.
After.
No question.
Mm-hmm. Grilled cheese or not, I will be there.
There's a place called the Beer Authority on 40th, right in Times Square across the New York Times building.
Just don't go to the bathroom.
Don't go to the bathroom or don't go there with Bill Willingham.
Shots fired. Wow.
No, we were there. We had an interesting discussion about tipping and a few other things. Uh-huh. Though apparently he liked me, even though we argued.
It was a number of years ago.
Yeah, okay. It was very, very many years ago.
It was a long time. It was like 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
They have 150 different beers. Was it 50 on tap and 100 bottles?
Yeah.
And great sandwiches and really good stuff.
It's a cool place if you can get a table and it's a good like central spot.
And it's
for
a block away from Midtown Comics.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. This all sounds amazing.
Yeah, I'm real stoked to come, and especially to meet Stéphane Sage, who's going to be at the con. And so that's kind of my I'm only bringing one thing to get signed because I have a carry on and I'm not lugging anything around with me to the convention, but I'm bringing a Sunstone comic with me.
Good for you. We're going to hopefully try to get him on our show here.
Yes.
Fairly soon. We're going to sort of double and triple team him from all angles to do this. So you guys had a great conversation with him some while back on The Misfits. So yes. He's certainly up for doing that. We here on Long Island, we're blessed in that the day before Comic-Con, he's going to be at Escape Pod Comics in Huntington with all sorts of goodies, apparently. So I'm going to try to find more
original painted artwork, he said.
Yes.
Dang.
Yeah. Nice. So,
yeah.
Now I just gifted someone with Sunstone Volume 1 and have gotten very, very nice response.
Cool. I'm gonna maybe pick up something for Bronwyn for Christmas.
You should. Definitely should.
Whoa, spoilers. Now she knows it's coming.
But she doesn't know what it is. She doesn't know what it is.
She said she's going to start listening, but she doesn't listen to the show.
Matt does not listen. Matt doesn't listen. So it's okay. It's okay.
After all these years, I still have people in my family that have no idea what this is or what we do. They think it's just this little hobby thing, and I'm like, it's a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
We're 253 episodes in, for goodness sake.
Yeah, it's been a good run.
Yeah. Speaking of good run, let's do our lightning rounds.
Whoa! Oh, hard segue.
You guys proud of that?
Papers everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
That was killer.
I'm going to start with Bob.
Oh.
Oh, thank God.
Panic in Joey's voice there.
This is like books are flying. I'm like juggling things. Oh my God.
Okay.
Bob, you ready?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm a little late with this one, but since the book itself is just as late, I feel justified in talking about Afterlife with Archie number 10, well after the fact of its release. It's Roberto Aguirre Sacasa and Francesco Francavilla, and they bring us the alternate origin for Josie and the Pussycats that ties together almost 100 years of pop culture and vampires, too. Just awesome to look at. Great story to read. You, at this point, just go for it. Two other comics that are into the 60s pop culture vibe, Star Trek New Visions number 12 by John Byrne. It features an intriguing story about a fleet of alien spacecraft that is causing stars to go nova. But as most of these have been so far, we get into some deeper philosophical ruminations on the nature of life, as the original series did. So it's not just like blowing stuff up. We have Batman 66, McSteed and Mrs. Peel by Ian Edgington and Matthew Dow Smith, which sees the Batcave invaded by cybernauts, a villainous standing revealed, and Mrs. Peel dancing her way past a swarm of African killer bees. Now, both those books highly recommended for this old-timer's corner. Then there's Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat number 10 by Kate Leth and Brittany Williams, opens with Patsy having been spirited away to another dimension by ex-husband Damon Hellstrom, the son of Satan. Now, is she in hell, or is it just her childhood home of Centerville, or are they the same? How is Hedy Wolf involved, and what can Jubilee do to help matters out? Lots of questions, but the answers are all in Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat number 10. Finally, Thor number 11, Jason Aaron, Russell Dowderman, a spectacular and satisfying conclusion to the Dario Agger Roxxon Exterminator story arc as part of the War of the Realms thing that's going on. Also brings into play, if you've seen the cover, the mysterious appearance of Dr. Jane Foster to tend to Thor's wounds suffered during the battle. As usual, Russell Dowderman's art is sensational. His choice of page layouts, just over the top and incredible. You have Roxxon Island falling to Earth over the skies of Manhattan, and the people inside are tumbling as the island tumbles. You add that to the twists and turns of a great story by Jason Aaron, and this issue was truly praiseworthy.
Mm-hmm. Oh! How does Jane Foster run to the aid of Thor?
You're going to have to read the book, my man.
Damn it.
Because the next issue will explain all.
Everything will be revealed.
Yes.
It was so great to read this. I mean,
man,
it's been one of my favorite books since it came out, and it just continues to amaze every issue.
I jumped off of that a couple of issues ago, stupidly, because I don't really like reading it in digital format.
Yeah, because this isn't.
Yeah, I need to get my hands on the physical copies. That book is so worth having in physical form.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Agreed. Agreed.
It's poor Dr. Jane Foster.
I want to read it. Don't show it to me. Damn it.
Oh, man, we're getting testy over there.
Yeah.
We're having a good time.
Yes, indeed.
Bob actually brought some very delicious Southern Tears pumpkin ale over tonight.
Mm. So, highly recommended by our local Swiftway craft beer store.
Yeah, it's two weeks in a row that we've had pumpkin ale. Good pumpkin beer.
I like it.
We have a Superman-Batman duel going in the glass.
Yeah. Nice. That's right. And you know what? We win.
Bob, IDW is putting out a new Star Trek book this week, Star Trek Waypoints. It's got two stories in it, one from the original series characters and one with the next-gen characters, too.
Who is on art and story detail?
I can find out for you.
Okay. Well, but, I'm in for that.
I saw the solicit and I was like, this sounds actually really cool. And over the last couple of months, they've been like kind of ending their old licensed comics and now they're kind of relaunching them. So it's kind of like a great spot for every couple of weeks. There's like a new Star Trek book coming out.
I was asking Melissa Megan, who writes for The Side and has been on podcasts before, about what Star Trek comic to jump into. Because I had just seen Star Trek Beyond and really wanted to get back into that universe, and she didn't know.
Mm.
So I guess this would be a good time to start jumping into some of those Star Trek comics.
Yeah, let me see if I can pull it up.
The thing that, because IDW is doing really a great job and have been now for just like 10 years with mm-hmm. that license.
Yeah.
You could jump anywhere into it. There have been crossovers with comic book characters.
Yeah.
Just recently did a Green Lantern crossover.
I saw that.
Right. You can go all the way back. John Byrne, before he did these photo novels, mm-hmm. was doing written and drawn books that featured the original cast in extended episodes from the old days with all sorts of things, including one called Crew, which I had him sign when he was at the Star Trek convention Melissa and Carol and I were at. In the original Star Trek pilot, The Menagerie, the first officer of the Enterprise under Captain Christopher Pike was number one. Well, number one was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And a Star Trek miniseries entitled Star Trek Crew by John Byrne features her story arc and her career building to that point. And it's very well done. If you get a chance, that could be a nice way to lead into the original series and that original pilot.
Okay.
I'm just scrolling through it right now. So the Next Generation story is by Donnie Cates and art by Mac Chater, who's doing Briggs Land. I really like his work there. And the Star Trek story is written and illustrated by Sandra Lanz, who I don't know much of her work, but I'm just scrolling through it right now, and it looks like it's an Uhura story, and it looks beautiful.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. So
I'm adding that to my list for tomorrow. By the way, tomorrow is also previews day for those people who have like 3 hours to spend.
Money.
It's important to go through it.
It is. I need to go through mine. I need to make my list. Steve.
Hi.
Are you ready for your lightning round?
Oh, I like this. I like this show.
You ready?
Here we go.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I have no notes this week,
woo-hoo,
my friends. So, here's the deal. I read Clean Room, Volume 1, Immaculate Conception, from Gail Simone, John Davis Hunt, and Quentin Winter, Vertigo Comics. I would like to tell you what I thought of it, but I'm not gonna. Ooh. And the reason for that is because October 21st, as I announced last week, is our next book club. And Clean Room by Gail Simone and so-and-so is the chosen book.
Nice.
So, get your copy of it, read it, let us know what you think, listen to the show. We'll be available the weekend after the 21st. We record on Fridays, blah, blah, blah.
We'll chat in a couple of minutes. Go.
So I went in and I read Batman 1-5, the new Tom King run, 1-6, actually. I got to say, I really didn't like 1-5. Not at all. Not at all. There was a lot about it that I didn't like. I'm really sorry. I know
by looking
really
out your window, the tortures are being
lit. Here's the thing. Like, a lot of the dialogue I found to be redundant and simple and like almost, I don't want to say amateurish because that might set some people off, but I'm going to speak very highly of Tom King in just another minute or so. But issue 6 was better. After like kind of the tragedy happens and we're kind of picking up the pieces and moving on, mm-hmm. The Gotham Girl stuff I think is interesting, but this was not the way for me to leap into a new Batman scene after leaving the Scott Snyder stuff. I don't really care for Finch's art on it, and just a miss.
The Finch?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
ooh.
It was a miss for me. It's getting a little bit better, so I'm going to stick with it for now, going into the monster stuff. But anyway, speaking of Tom King, I don't want to just crap on him. I read The Vision, number 11. You guys, this is the book. Like, this is, when we get to our end of the year stuff and we talk about series and people need to catch up with stuff, I'm going to push really, really, really hard for this series. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. There's tons and tons of stuff that goes on in this issue. It's one of those monthly books, so I start to forget, and I read the little recap and I'm like, oh my god, that's right, that's where we were. and just so much craziness happens like to the series itself and in conjunction with the Civil War II stuff, that the way it's so seamlessly woven into all of it is genius. It's fantastic. That's why the Batman stuff is kind of blowing my mind so much, because I don't understand how I could love somebody's writing so much on one book and then you go to the other one and I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know, but like I said, there's promise for Batman, but the Vision, damn, that book is so good.
Mm-hmm.
It is so, so, so good. That's all I got.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good. Let's see if I figure out how to turn this timer off, because I still have trouble with it.
I did read number 11.
Yeah.
And that is nuts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it is, with all the craziness of all sorts of visions.
Yeah.
the moments with Wanda.
Yeah. Issue number 8. I'm telling you, I think it's issue number 8 is the Wanda issue. Not to spoil stuff, but we get to single issues. It's all about them, and it's all about how all of that worked out. And reading that series from the beginning, I read like 1 through 9 in one sitting or something like that. And it is just this thing that starts off so innocently and so nice and so pleasant, and it just unravels. Yeah. By the end of the last issue, you're like, oh, wow, okay, so this is going to be like Pleasantville, the dark side.
Yeah.
And that's but great. It's not just dark. Like, dark is such a broad term. It's an affecting darkness. It's a creeping, like, maddening boil that goes on throughout the story, that it's so well-paced that the hooks and the splash pages and the deliveries of stuff, he drops bombs like halfway through an issue. They don't just wait for the end of the issue with everything and just drag things out. There's things that like blow your hair back at least sometimes 3 and 4 times within one issue. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They have up to number 5 on Marvel Unlimited right now, which is how I've been reading it, which is slower than I'd like to, but I've been enjoying it so far. So I haven't gotten to crazy. Issue 8 yet. Now I'm expecting to be blown away by issue 8.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Like, just when you, it's just robots trying to be people.
Mm-hmm.
And inherently, things are going to be different for them. And as much as they try to live a normal life, there's really no way that they can in man's world. And that's what it's about. And the idea of being this kind of segregated AI or intelligence or whatever, and people, your own friends, having to treat you differently because of your background and who you were born from and what you've done in the past, and being treated, you know, differently than any of your other teammates. And these are supposed to be your friends, and they're coming after not just you but your family because they're like you.
Yeah.
You know, you made them, so if you're going to be evil, the rest of your family must be evil. And in this case, they couldn't be more right, but it's complicated.
Yes. Yeah. And I also want to echo what you're saying on Batman numbers 1 through 6.
Yeah.
It was a rough beginning.
Yeah. I'm not trying to, you know, I know that there are people that listen to the podcast and they, you know, they like it, and I don't want to try to instigate any like negative tweeting or anything like that, but I'm allowed to not like it, and I don't like it. I don't think that it was a good start. There are whole pages that I could have pulled and read to you, but I don't understand why the same words keep coming up within conversations. I've never seen some dialogue like this where I really had to put the book down and just go, am I reading this wrong? And really kind of taken aback, because I like Tom King and I like some of his other stuff, and I know that he is a great writer in some regards, but just this start for Batman has been so rough. The only thing that has really stuck with me throughout that story, like, I don't mind the story itself. I don't mind the Gotham and Gotham Girl angle. It was more the dialogue and the pacing to get to that trade number and stuff like that, where things just felt like they were dragged out and kind of slow and drab. And then the stuff that goes on with Gotham Girl, I think, is at least interesting and is kind of a really bizarre fallout from the event, considering the way that she's talking about
some things. Mm-hmm. She's a little bit off her rocker, but she keeps mentioning that things happen in the future that I'm wondering if she gathers herself and those things come to fruition. I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and we'll be talking about Batman number 7, the start of the Batman crossover later on in the show, which in my opinion was better than the first 6 issues.
Yeah. No, I dug so that.
Just getting better, guys. It's getting better.
Totally.
If you were turned off by issues 1 and 2, pick up 7. You might like it more now. Okay.
Yeah, definitely showing improvement toward the end.
And that's what matters. That's what matters. Yep. Joey, you got your notes? You ready?
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
All right. Hellboy and the BPRD 1954. Mike Mignola, Chris Roberson, Stephen Green, and Dave Stewart on art. Technically, this is number 11 in a series of these Hellboy and BPRD 1954 stories, but this is number 1 in a 2-part story entitled Black Sun. They do something very interesting there. It says number 1 on the front cover, but when you open it up, it says 11 in a series. Found that interesting. Here, Hellboy and Dr. Woodrow Ferrier head to a floating island. Is there any other kind? in the Arctic Ocean to investigate mysterious attacks on a crew up there. In classic Hellboy fashion, things get weird fast as the original theory of polar bears ends up only being a part of the story. Every time I dip into the Hellboy Mignola-verse, I freaking love it. It's so fun. The characters are great. The consistency of it. Visually, it's stunning. The history, the way that he incorporates, obviously, the 1954 zeitgeist there is awesome as well. Well, really love like this, and I'll definitely read issue 2 in this story. Also, Revolution number 1, IDW's big crossover event featuring all of their licensed toy properties except My Little Pony, which is kind of disappointing to me, but anyway. John Barber and Cullen Bunn on this, Fico Osio and Sebastian Cheng on art. Basically, the G.I. Joes go head-to-head with the Transformers, and they just
fight.
No, like, awesome. How are you going to say no to that?
Yeah.
So we got the Transformers in here. We got G.I. Joe, Action Man, Rom, and the Micronauts are going to show up. If they worked the My Little Ponies in there, I would die. But whatever. It was actually a lot of fun. It looked great. Classic kind of like good guys and good guys. Oh, no, they misconstrue something, and now they're fighting each other. Oh, no. But, mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, it's G.I. Joe shooting at Transformers. So how can you say no?
Yeah.
7 to Eternity, number 1, Image, Rick Remender and Jerome Opeña. Matt Hollingsworth on colors. First of all, Jerome Opeña's artwork with Matt Hollingsworth colors is like night and day versus anything else I've seen Opeña do. A lot of the Marvel stuff that he did, I was almost like, wait a minute, this is Jerome Opeña? Just the way that Hollingsworth colors liven it up a little bit. It's a lovely book. It's sci-fi fantasy. It's a lot of world building. Remender introduces us to the Ositis family, who refused to kind of pay the tribute of the tyrannical Mud King. When tragedy befalls the family at the hands of the Mud King, Adam opts to kind of travel far and wide to face him down. Great, lavish world. Not necessarily my cup of tea. I like my stories a little bit more grounded, but anybody that loves that kind of all-out, genre-bending, high fantasy will, I think, really enjoy this book. How much time do I have?
17 seconds.
Okay, Marvel graphic novels are on Marvel Unlimited now. I read Endless Wartime, the Warren Ellis and Mike McCone one, and X-Men and No More Humans, Mike Carey and Salvador LaRocca. The X-Men story was awesome, loved it, one of my favorite kind of X-Men stories. Endless Wartime was Marvel trying to have its cake and eat it too with the canon of the comics and trying to merge it with the MCU characterization. Totally doesn't work. But X-Men No More Humans totally works. Really enjoyed it.
Awesome. Awesome.
Sweet.
Okay.
Let me just jump in really quickly.
Yeah.
Joey, one time I was talking to Harlan Ellison at an Icon, and I used the phrase you just did about, you know, have your cake and eat it too.
Mm-hmm.
He spent about 10 minutes correcting me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it doesn't make sense.
Because he said, no, it should be the other way around. You can't eat your cake and have it too.
Yeah.
Yes.
You can have it in your belly.
No, but you can't have it in front of you. I had never thought of that before. And he went, see, there you go. And he just walked away.
But, you know, sometimes you just got to play with the language at your disposal, you know.
Yeah.
It's why he's my curmudgeonly role model.
Nice.
It's like, okay, Harlan. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Look, he's a guy one time at a show, he would spend lots of minutes talking to everybody, signing and chatting and having stories and so on and so forth. And this one day, the line had backed up so much, he called out for pizza. And the pizzas got delivered to the college campus, and he walked up and down the line delivering slices of pizza and autographs.
That's amazing.
Now, yeah, crabby old man, but a heart of
pizza.
Fool's gold.
Pizza.
Yeah, a heart of pizza. Harlem was a lot of fun, and I now can't hear that phrase without instantly seeing his face correcting me.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to go into my lightning round.
Okay. We are ready.
Let's see how this goes. Okay. So Joyride, Volume 1 by Jackson Lansing, Colin Kelly, and Marcus Toe. So what do you get when you mix Wanderlust with Laws Against Space Travel? You get a teenage girl who makes friends with an alien, grabs her best friend, and then heads for the stars.
Of course.
Yes. So this action-adventure series from Boom doubles kind of as a coming-of-age story, and with these teenagers who are kind of semi-adults, kind of on their own. They're living on their own. They're in government positions and things like that, but they're not fully adults, not fully in charge of their lives yet. And their status as fugitives in this comic makes room for the characters to act either somewhat reckless or hypervigilant, and seeing that dichotomy play out between the characters is a lot of fun. The artwork is really expressive and extremely expanse. Irma Nivala, and I'm not even sure if I'm saying that right, she does the coloring on this book, and her space scenes are incredible. I love it. Volume 1 has numbers 1 through 4, and also number 5 of this series was released just this last week, same time as the first volume. All New Wolverine number 12 by Tom Taylor and Ig Guerra. So the cover has Laura cradling Gabby's lifeless body.
Oh, God.
Yes. Yep. And so she's like not really happy with Old Man Logan right now. But if you know anything about cloning and Wolverine, there's kind of a healing factor in the DNA. For what it's worth. she's still not ready to forgive Logan, and Logan's not ready to move past the traumatic events from his own timeline. The first two pages of this comic show Logan like tearing up tombstones. And when you look at the pieces of the tombstone on the floor, it says, Gabby lies. Now, I don't know what they're going to do with that. I don't trust it. I don't know. Different timeline, Civil War II, who knows? But now they've got me paranoid, and I hate it because I love Gabby so much. I hate it.
I read that issue too. Yes. So good.
Just like they just threw it in the beginning. And I was like, guys, thanks.
Especially when we only got one out of the three that are left.
Yes. Leave her alone. Leave her alone, please.
Yeah.
I need her. And finally, Manifest Destiny number 23 by Chris Stingas and Matthew Roberts. It just continues to make me incredibly uncomfortable because of the amount of gore and horror. I naturally shy away from this kind of stuff, but like I have this odd fascination with this Bastion talking skull on this emaciated waste of a psychotic survivor running through the American Louisiana Purchase or whatever. How do you turn this thing off? I swear, the update. I still can't get it.
Talk about your other book on the lightning round too when you get to it.
Oh, well, I didn't write anything down.
Oh, you're breaking my heart, Mara.
Well, I was really
go
surprised.
For it.
I was really surprised. Okay, let me finish Manifest Destiny. Yeah. It's the fifth installment in a 6-part series on Sasquatch. So, in this particular issue, they're not really dealing a whole lot with Sasquatch. Just the crazy lone survivor guy with a Bastion skull of his former colleague. It's crazy. I love it.
I remember that from my Lewis and Clark readings back in school.
Yeah.
I mean, Sasquatch was right there, right there in the front.
And so the book I was going to talk about that I was really surprised was not on Joey's list,
Well, I was like, I don't want to talk about Wicked and Divine all the time. So when I saw, I was like, I'll leave it off and maybe somebody else will talk about it. So when I saw it on your list, I was like, thank you, Mara.
I put it on my list and I felt like really underqualified to talk about it because I wasn't Joey.
What?
So.
But you said that you've been reading it right along, right?
I have, but I have not been remembering it very well. And that's my problem. And so the book.
Well, the good thing about. Go ahead.
I was going to say, we're talking about Wicked and Divine 1831. Or was it 35? I can't remember. I think it's 31. And it's a one-shot that Kieran Gillen did with Stephanie Hans doing artwork on it.
What?
Yes.
Boy.
And so
it's so amazing.
It's this just a story that takes place in 1831 with that particular incarnation of the gods and goddesses. And I was like, this is odd, but I kind of like it. Don't really know how it goes in. I haven't really been too invested in the mythology of Wicked and Divine, so I don't know if this is adding anything to anyone's theories of the comic or their interpretations of characters and things like that, but it was a really neat way to kind of dive further in the past and just kind of see how those patterns have evolved over time.
Well, I think that's kind of what it's doing, right? Because in the mainline book, right, you have the kind of twist in the story with the revelation of, you know, who's been pulling the strings and everything and the shocking ending to the last issue. And then you have this 1831 issue that has the kind of end of that pantheon and how those characters meet their kind of grim, capital R, romantic era fates, if you will. And it's dark and it's weird and it has that kind of, again, like Byronic feel to it. Not to get super literary, but you know, Stephanie Hahn's artwork is super amazing. Mm-hmm. It's so good. It's so spectacular. It was also really jarring because the gods that he includes in here are like Lucifer and Inanna and some of these characters that we have modern incarnations of them in Wicked and Divine, the regular book. So now to see them as these other versions in 1831, I think it just expands the mythos a little bit. I don't know if it's like mandatory reading to get the what's going on in the main arc, but I think what I saw a lot of people talking about were, you know, if you're not reading Wicked and Divine and you wanted to kind of dip your toe into that world, what the one shot does is it gives you that energy and it gives you that vibe. And it gives you just an inkling of the type of story that's being told.
How crazy everything is.
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah. And it's so pretty. It's very pretty.
Very pretty. I enjoyed it. I just, after I finished, I was like, I'm not sure what I read. I know I liked it because I didn't hate it, but I'm not exactly sure like what was going on. So,
That says you should reread it. You never know.
Yeah.
Which is the best kind of book. Yeah.
Yeah. And it does have that kind of like Frankenstein ending where the creature / whatever isn't accounted for at the end of the book. So spoilers for Frankenstein. Sorry. but you know, maybe that'll come back in the main book. Who knows? Who knows with Wicked and Divine, let's be real.
Yeah. Maybe Frankenstein will show up.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
So, Bob, you had mentioned off air in our text scene and correspondence back and forth about black magic.
And you had an
article about it.
Well, it was tweeted out this week by Greg Rucka that black magic, which is being optioned for television, the series he's doing for Image with Nicholas Scott, will be returning in April of next year.
Mm-hmm.
And we just did that on our book club and had a great time. And Ms. Scott actually apparently listened and said some nice things that we actually got some things right about our guesses about his fabulous sort of Wiccan-based police procedural, I guess is how to describe it.
Gothic noir.
And it's great that it's coming back. And we were all saying that the only thing that made it okay that it was disappearing for a while is that creative team would be doing Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. As an adjunct to the black magic news, it's like getting the thorn that comes with a rose.
Yeah, the cake and eating it too.
Yeah, exactly. Because Ms. Nicola Scott will be leaving Wonder Woman as of issue number 14 in January. So someone then asked Greg, well, how long is this bi-monthly, twice monthly? Bi-monthly means every 2 months, right?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Bi-weekly.
Semi-monthly.
That only goes up to issue 24.
Really?
And then, right, and then someone asked, well, what happens after that? Are you staying on the book? Well, could be.
You're killing me, Greg.
Right. Now, Steve made a great point, so go ahead, about a year of great.
Tell me what my great point was.
Your great point about, look, we got a great year of Wonder Woman story. He's from Greg Rucka.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't know. I made a snarky-ish comment that I would rather have 24 incredible issues of a Greg Rucka Wonder Woman that ends up most likely at this rate being a timeless, addition mm-hmm. to the series itself. But I'll take that over the other stuff that I've gotten in the past since we started this thing.
It's great. No, we hope that he continues, whether it's Liam Sharp or someone else, but Nicola Scott.
But We knew it was coming.
I know.
Look,
I'm a cockeyed optimist. I would prefer that things just go on the way they are that I'm enjoying.
Here's my advice. We're all collectively riding this Wonder Woman high.
Oh, yeah.
Every other week or every podcast, we find a way to talk about Wonder Woman. Here we are. Just sit back, enjoy it, get a fork and knife and eat it up, and as long as the meal lasts.
Yes,
reread it after that. Absolutely.
Who knows? He could move forward with the book, or somebody else that's exciting that uses his book as the groundwork to continue it on. They'll take cues from him starting everything over and setting the new record straight, so to speak.
I think
we've arrived at the good Wonder Woman stuff.
Yeah. Yes.
Yep. Have that cake.
Yes. Maybe eat it up.
Where's my cake, Bedelia?
My perspective with comics like this is that I would rather be left wanting more than being sick of it. So if, Greg Rucka leaves after issue 24, I'm happy for it. I hope that when issue 24 comes and he's gone, I still want more. Because that means I'm going to go back and I'm going to enjoy from the beginning and reread things and have a happy feeling about it than him dragging on 60, 70 issues of Wonder Woman and having highs and lows associated with his writing.
Go out on the high note.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he could be followed by, we don't know yet.
Yeah, Margaret Bennett, please.
It was her gig before. Mm-hmm. So let's hope they offer it to her again.
Yes.
That would be nice. Yes. Interesting.
Maybe that's the plan. Win everybody back and then hand over the reins.
Yeah. Now I'm excited.
The new guard. Yes.
See, I told you. It's all going to be good.
Yeah. Mm. Optimism. Yes. Comics. Happy.
Nice.
It has been better.
Yeah. Yeah. More good than bad lately.
Amen.
Yes. Any other news items to hit on? We good
It's not news, but maybe I should announce it. I don't know if I announced my last podcast with the Games Podcast on this podcast. I said podcast a lot just now.
You can't say podcast too many times during a podcast.
Okay. At any rate, this Thursday, we're doing a special podcast where we talk about the games that shaped us as like people and as players throughout the years. So it's a very like nostalgia heavy conversation between Bobby and Justin and I, and it was a lot of fun, and I give kind of my farewell adieu speech and say my thank yous and everything. And just if you listen to the Games Podcast, it's a good one to go and check out, because that's it until I come back for the end of the year stuff, and then after that is unknown.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. Moving on to busy times and greener pastures.
Yeah.
So you're like one of those hidden values in a game. You have to level up to get Steve episodes.
That is absolutely right.
Nice. Bob, look at that. Yeah.
But it's also just a really good episode of the show. So
I'm sure it is.
They're going to be, I believe, switching up the format of the show going forward. So it's another thing that enjoy it while it lasts. So just a heads up.
Awesome.
And that's it. That's all.
Well, you know, it's a monumental time, you know, leaving a podcast, and hopefully everything works out.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. I'm in the middle. I mentioned Luigi's Mansion earlier. I just hooked up my Wii and I got all my GameCube games out and everything. And it's weird going back and not being concerned about playing like the next hot thing for the sake of being able to talk about it. And I like going back and checking out my old stuff and just kind of enjoying the backlog, because it is vast that I have. And it's other work related things too. I explained the whole thing on the podcast, so there's no reason to talk about it here. But
go listen to it, guys.
Yeah, yeah. But I had a lot of fun with it. I'm very, you know, optimistic. I'm really excited about all the things that I have coming up, and I will say more as they happen.
Yeah, hopefully more time for comics.
Yeah,
yeah.
We have some sort of internal news. We'll might as well throw that in here while we're vamping. Next week we will have as a guest Marty Langford, who directed the documentary Doomed about the Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie, which is about to finally get released on DVD and Blu-ray and streaming services across the world, which one of these days I'll figure out how you do that.
Yeah.
But it's a great story. He was on with us 3 years ago when his journey began, so that should be a lot of fun. I'm sure, Mara, that Matt owns a copy of the Roger Corman Fantastic Four.
I don't know if he does, and I have to ask him when he gets back. He's doing parent-teacher conferences or something right now. That time of year.
I got that on Thursday.
But I definitely want to watch it before he comes on next week.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun stories that they're told within the documentary, as he interviews everyone involved, except basically the Marvel higher-ups who wouldn't talk to him.
Mucky, mucky, muck.
Yeah, so those mucky mucks like Avi Arad and Stan.
Oh, yes, mucky mucks.
they're not allowed on
terrible, set. Terrible people.
Yeah.
For us, we are going to record sort of, for those who remember the IFC show Dinner at 5, our fifth anniversary comes up on October 17th, which is a Monday. Yeah. So we're going to do a little sort of get together at our local Irish pub and sit upstairs and chat, Bobby, Steve, and I, perhaps Brian, with our friend Jeff moderating and some friends and family. Anyone in the area, it's not a big gathering. There may be an after party downstairs, but that will be posted up on site as well. We have our book club, the 21st, that Steve mentioned.
Yep.
We may be doing, the details aren't completely firmed up yet, but Steve and I may be doing a live broadcast on the 26th from a local comic store.
Okay.
Don't want to say too much yet, because I will see
quickly.
I will see the gentleman tomorrow. We're working on he's got an artist coming in, and we're going to just do some chatting, and I'll say more next week when I know a little bit more. Our good friend of the podcast, Professor Carolyn Coca, is doing a signing for her new book, Super Women, which we've all run through. And that's on the 27th at Escape Pod Comics in Huntington, which on October 5th will also be hosting Stapon and Linda Sayich.
Jesus.
Yeah. There's a lot going on.
October's a big month all of a sudden.
Yes.
For comics,
I hope everybody listening has written all of this down, because this podcast will explode 30 seconds after it ends.
Yeah. Well, I've got one more for going on internal site news and stuff like that. Our next legendary run is Scott Snyder's Detective Comics.
Wow.
So it's not the Batman one. It's, you know, Detective Comics, the Jacques and Francavilla run. Which
Francisco Francavilla.
Oh my gosh.
How many issues are we talking about?
We're talking about like 10, which coming off of Thor was much needed.
Yeah, I thought it was more than that somehow, but okay.
It's only 10 issues?
The Detective Comics, yes.
Okay, that's why.
Yeah. Okay.
Because Thor was like, I swear, I think it was like 50 issues or something. It was insane for 2 weeks to get through all of that, but
There's a lot of issues in Sweet Tooth if we end up doing that. I found my trades the other day. It's
is it like 60?
I don't know if it's that many. I'll have to look.
We should do Claremont all 15 years. Let's do it.
Nope. It would take me 15 years to get through.
Yeah.
Have you done Whedon's Astonishing X-Men yet?
Yeah, that was
that was the first one.
That was our first one.
I was going to say, okay.
It was a long time ago.
Takes me back.
Yeah.
I got Ecstatics on the shelf. That's the omnibus that I've never cracked.
I've got that too. I've never opened it either.
I've read it. I read the whole damn thing. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so weird. So weird. It's so good. Yeah, I think you'll like it.
We like weird. We like weird.
Lots it's a weird book.
In that one, right?
You guys did Iron Fist. That would have totally been down for Iron Fist.
Yeah, we did. We did Matt Fraction and Brubaker's Iron Fist a while back.
Which is awesome.
He was a lot of fun. But yeah, lots of good episodes. And like I said, Detective Comics is coming up. Then like Lock and Key, Remender's X-Force, some other stuff I already forgot. I'll think of it later.
And we can talk about them when you're here next week.
Yeah, yeah. I should bring my planner so we can lay it all out in front of you guys. Show you the inner workings.
I want to see all those colors.
Yes, it is. It is a masterpiece.
My it's planner. A mosaic.
So let's move back into some single issues and comics and things like that. Let's kick it off with Power Man and Iron Fist number 10. Bob.
Nice. Oh boy, we are in the midst of the Civil War II. Aftermath, mid-math, I don't know where you want to call what we're doing here, but Danny's in prison because of the machinations of a group called Preemptive Strike, who are using facial recognition software, some fancy tomfoolery over there, to create false criminal records for people who may have run afoul of the law or just slightly tainted, and now there are all these people in prison who have no business being there. Now, Danny, he'd just as soon stay there to make a point, even though, as Luke points out to when he visits him, you know, you could just buy your way out of prison. You could, you know, talk to your lawyer and you're done. He went, no, not everyone can do that. Mm-hmm. And that is just a great little piece of writing by David Walker. The whole issue is just filled with that. Mm-hmm. Luke, now for those people early on, let me just throw this out there. You know, Danny in the first three or four issues was really just enjoying the idea of teaming up. It was just so up.
Happy-go-lucky.
Right. Is this a little different than the Danny before? No, he had been part of that here and there. He loved the idea of them as a team. But we are now going back. We see some of his early life and the struggles he did to get to be the Iron Fist. Luke is remembering being in prison himself. Mm. We're tying all the two origins together. So Luke is plotting, how do we get Danny out of here? What comes next? And he has his own little crew of people. It's the relatives of the folks in prison. And of course, the amazing Mystico, Señor Magico.
Yes.
Who is back and who, of course, turns Gadget into a spectacles wearing frog.
Hmm.
It is the humor is still there. That's been part and parcel in this series all the way through. But we are now so deeply into this event that David Walker's ability to tell these deep stories really comes into play. Luke brings in Mockingbird and Centurion. Mockingbird, who had been part of the Thunderbirds run, Melissa Gold. And the idea of them as convicts who could do right and change their lives over just informs the rest of this story. They're planning, but Luke doesn't know. He's asking for help. You know, planning's not his thing, but he knows who to go to, and they can triangulate the ideas when Carol shows up with her own little crew.
Bum, bum, bum.
With, you know, Ulysses says you're going to break Danny out of prison. The conversation between the two of them that runs through a couple of pages is absolutely spot on. As have so many of these smaller books about Civil War.
Yeah.
Just really gets to the heart of things. I'll shut up a bit. Who wants to jump in as to what they got out of this issue?
I can.
Go ahead, Steve.
All right. First, I dig this series a lot. It took me a few issues to warm up to it, but once it really hit for me, it's been solid ever since. I've gone back a third time and read from number one forward just because of how good it has been. This issue is off the charts, though.
Yeah.
And I really, I got to give it up a lot to Sanford Green and Flaviano for their artwork and John Rauch for the colors, because this book is positively gorgeous, but not just gorgeous. It's like it's filled with so much personality, and there's so many differing looks and styles to all of the people that show up. I positively love the cast of these weird characters and these like ex supervillains and reformed, you know, whatever, like heroes that are used to be villains and all these things.
They're all from Luke Cage's Rogues Gallery.
Yeah. You know? I love it when I meet new characters and they're written with like so much flair that I can hear their voices in my head, even if they're brand new to me. Like this guy, Dontrell Cockroach Hamilton. He is, if you've ever seen Cheech and Chong's Up in Smoke.
Yes.
You see, okay. Do you remember Curtis?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
He is Curtis. You stick a hat and glasses on this guy, and it's Curtis from that movie. And I hear that actor's voice in my head. I even pulled up a picture of him, tweeted it out. They look the same. Like, if he was still alive, he could play this guy in a film starring these characters. But, and it's really poignant. You know, like, it's not only dealing with the Civil War II stuff, but it's dealing with it in a very close-to-home matter between Danny sticking to his guns and Luke kind of addressing some of the profiling issues that are going on in the Civil War II, which, you know, unfortunately bleeds out into what's happening now around the world and, you know, all over the place. And it does it seamlessly and it does it smartly. Both from the perspective of the characters and just the writer himself. I get like there's a message to be had. And sometimes these tie-in books, they're just there because it's part of the formula. And, you know, when we come to issues one through whatever, you're roped into this event because that's what we're doing and your characters are involved. So figure it out, that you take that opportunity to write something that has weight and impact to it. And this and the Spider-Woman stuff, the tie-ins have been really, really cool for the event. Some of them, like there's a good amount of them, though. It's been really fun to kind of follow these smaller books through this event and get enough of what's going on in the main book just from all the side stuff that you get from these issues. Mm-hmm. So really, it knocked it. I read The Vision and this one after the other. And I was like panicking to have something to talk about on the show. And then I hit on those two issues. And I was just like, yes, here we go. That's it. 253 to can.
Yeah. Joey, did you read this issue?
Yeah, just, you know, echoing everything that Bob and Steve have said. I think one of the, not criticisms, but, you know, one of my issues with the earlier parts of Power Man and Iron Fist was kind of what Bob was saying about, you know, I didn't really dig how Danny was being portrayed. It just felt a little too happy-go-lucky. You know, I love the book. I think it's one of my favorite books out there. But that was just, you know, a little thing that was nagging me throughout those early issues. But I think what Civil War II has done is that it's allowed Walker to tell a story that really has political and social resonance. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, following him on Twitter and just admiring his stance and his forthcoming attitude towards sharing his thoughts, that he is so willing to bring that into the book too. I'm just so intrigued to see and read. And it's really added another layer to this book that I already really love and already has such a distinct identity. Now it has that extra edge and something that I'm also thinking about every single day too. It just makes the book all the more, you know, powerful for me. So yeah, I totally agree. I think it's one of the best books out there.
And I have not been reading the series. I do need to fix that really soon. But it just dawned on me that Luke Cage Netflix series premieres September 30th. Or, sorry.
Oh, my God. Oh,
October
my God,
30th.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh my God.
No, September 30th. I'm right.
It's 3 days from now.
Yes. Yeah. So.
Guess what my plans are for tomorrow?
What?
Anybody?
What?
Tomorrow afternoon, I'm going into New York City to go to the premiere of Luke Cage at the AMC Theater with our friend Lauren.
So you're just going to watch like the first episode?
Yeah, but like it's going to be an event. Like there are going to be people there. Yeah. I think I don't know. I shouldn't. Yeah, I'm not. You know what? I'm not going to say too much because I don't really know what the deal is. I just know that I'll be watching the episode tomorrow, and I am beyond pumped because there's a lot. I've watched very little. I watched one little tiny little snippet of something, and I heard the music, and I am so on board. I heard that the soundtrack for this particular Netflix show is going to be very tailored. And picked specifically, and I can't wait to see how they do that whole scene in this string of Netflix books. I'm almost as excited for the soundtrack as I am for the actual show.
Wow.
Yeah, I foresee me coming home from work on Friday and just like I did for Jessica Jones, through. 6 hours, quick nap, another 5 hours, and then we're done.
straight through.
Hey, I'm under 30. I can still manage this. I got a couple more years before I can't do that anymore.
You'll find years out you need much less sleep.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good.
So between like 30 and 50, it's a problem. After 50, yeah, you can stay up all night again. Because you've slept all those years in between.
Just been building up that sleep bank there.
Exactly. Nice.
So staying in the Marvel universe, let's move on to Civil War II, number 5.
Oof.
Joey, what do you think about that?
Oof is right. All right, here we go. Civil War II. Okay, so for those of you that don't remember Civil War IV, since it was a while ago, that issue ended with the confrontation of all of the heroes with really no explanation of why anyone was on either side. Mm-hmm. And then what Civil War V is the brawl between all of those heroes, still with no real explanation as to why anyone is on either side. There's a little bit, you know, the Guardians have their thing, like, oh, Carol, talk to us, and blah, blah, blah. There's moments like that. But most of this issue is dedicated to just, you know, Marvel heroes fisticuffs. And each character, you know, they have little matchups. You know, Blue Marvel and Luke Cage have a little matchup, and Magic and Sam Wilson have a little matchup, and you know, there are little beats that are entertaining. However, they carry at least for me, no a weight, like no emotional or significance weight to them. And most of the issue was dedicated to that until this kind of final big reveal. You know, Ulysses has this like moment where he looks out and he sees all the heroes fighting, and he like cries, and then his powers like leech out of him and attack all, and leech out onto all the heroes. And then spoiler right here, the premonition that he has. The omen that he has is an image of Miles Morales, Spider-Man, standing over a dead Steve Rogers, Captain America.
Gosh.
Again, as has been the case with the Ulysses stuff, no explanation, no context, nothing. And it kind of ends with, you know, the hero stopping their fight and Carol standing over Miles and saying, you know, you're under arrest. So that's the story there, but it all just kind of happens. I think what I've realized starting with the tail end of 4 into 5 is that all of the conversations that we had about the relevance and immediacy and intrigue surrounding the concept of the profiling and the premonitions and this form of justice has totally gone out the window. I mean, with issue 5, it just felt like, you know, let's have a fight. And without any of the reasons for why these characters fell on either side, none of it really hit. At the very least, what Civil War 1 did, no matter what you think about that series, was that there were moments in that book where it was painful to see these heroes fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie, when we talked about the movie, it still had that element as well. This kind of doesn't have that, and it does kind of feel like a random altercation. And the hilarious part of it is that there is like news coverage in classic Bendis style. You know, there's like news coverage, and the newscasters are like, there's no reports on why the heroes are fighting, but you know, yeah. It just seems like things are weird, blah blah blah. And I'm like, what is happening?
Like, are these none of like this comic fan tweets?
Yeah, exactly. Like, none of this makes sense to me anymore. And the hardest part about this book, and where I was immediately taken out of it, was having read Ultimates and having read Luke Cage in Power Man and Iron Fist, to then see those characters used in this book and the conversations that they're having in this book, it just totally did not match. And you get that sometimes with the crossovers, you know, having done so many of these events, but they just seem so detached from what's going on in their mainline books.
There was something that, specifically about that interaction that really bothered me.
Which one, the Luke Cage one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was Blue Marvel saying something like, I've got X number of PhDs and X number of masters. Do you really think that I'm wrong?
Yeah, and Luke Cage was like, I just wanted to be like, Luke Cage was like, no, I'm wrong. I'm going to go back to my own book and figure out what's going on over there. You know, the book still looks great. I mean, Marquez and Ponsor are putting together a lovely, lovely book, probably one of the best looking events that Marvel's done in a while, just because of its consistency. I think, you know, what those events have kind of become in recent years, aside from Secret Wars, was like multiple artists on the one event, you know, looking back at some of those these last few. So in that case, it is still a very lovely book to read, but storyline wise I think it's just gone off the rails, and I just don't see a way for it to climax in a way that does any of these characters justice.
Mm-hmm.
And the hardest part about it is that a lot of times with these events, like just going back to Secret Wars, you know, there was always that like end of the tunnel, like, oh, we just, you know, the book will be done and then they'll relaunch the books and whatever, and we'll get those stories. But with Civil War II, the hardest part about reading it is, like, if I don't like Luke Cage in this book, I could just go read Power Man and Iron Fist. I don't have to wait 5 months, you know? Like, it's right there. It came out the same week, you know? Like, I don't need to read this event comic if I want to read my character portrayed in an interesting and developed way in the other book. So a lot of the goodwill that I had towards this series for the first half really kind of fell away for this issue. I don't know if it's going to come back. I mean, I'm halfway and I'll read it so that we can talk about it, but I don't know. Kind of lost me here.
Yeah. Bob, did you read it?
Yes, I did. And I have all the same feelings you guys did. There's something really interesting. Again, Brian Michael Bendis is an extremely popular writer. He is very good at what he does. If you happen to like what he does.
Right.
I think his work on smaller books, particularly, you know, the original Ultimate Spider-Man, the Spider-Men series, I thought was one of the best miniseries of a couple of years ago, really handled all that Daredevil very, very well. Awesome. Right. And there's a certain sense of irony that's missing from his work to me, where he can do that, where you're talking about the news reports. They're fighting. I don't know why. Or he's so aware of it that he wants to comment on his own weird missteps. And I don't get this. So is that arrogance or irony? I'm not sure. As with bringing the X-Men back from the past to comment about how dark the heroes are and how much violence there is when he's the guy who perpetuates the violence among heroes.
Right.
It's a weird quirk that I don't quite get. And there's stuff about his work I like, but it's these things that don't. And a book like this that is just mindless brawling with talking heads surrounding it leaves me very cold.
Mm-hmm.
Those panels of Miles standing over Steve in this blasted landscape and sort of purplish bluey, you know, visionary tones, I suppose they're meant to be, Don't we ever ask any questions? No, we'll just no. In all the other books that we're talking about, whether it's Spider-Woman or over in Ms. Marvel or in Power Man Iron Fist, people are talking about these problems and what's going on. And it's over in A-Force. And is it meant to be that? That that's where we're supposed to get the extra parts of this story?
Yeah.
But for
yeah.
those people who can't afford $40 a month to buy Civil Wars 2 and the rest of the books that go with it, they're getting cheated. Because as you're saying, Joy, the main story has gone off the rails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, oh, wait, you have to buy the trade omnibus edition for...
Get all the tie-ins.
I don't get it. I don't get... I don't want to put it all on him. This is obviously the writer's retreats, and they all did this, and this is Marvel's idea. We have to have one of these now and again. I'm very glad I checked out, and what little bit I'm getting from my fringy books, I'm mostly enjoying. So there's that. Steve, did you read Civil War 2, number 5?
I did not. Confused. I did not.
Okay.
You will soon.
Yes.
I'm right there with you guys. The only reason I'm still reading the Civil War 2 main storyline is because I enjoy the tie-ins so much that I want to know the context of what they're arguing about. Okay.
They don't even match up anymore.
They don't. You know? They don't. And like the meat of this argument is in every other book but Civil War 2. Which is why I'm like, oh, I love how they're dealing with it in Mockingbird. I love how they're dealing with it in Ms. Marvel and Nova and Spider-Man and all these books that I've been enjoying, you know, since I started reading them. And, you know, it's just one of those things where the only reason I'm, again, buying this main Civil War II book is because I still enjoy my regular pool and I just want to know more about what they're talking about.
Yeah. So. I wonder, you know, and I just kind of had this thought too, like the Civil War II name obviously is to riff off of Civil War, mm-hmm. which the movie came out and that's when they were releasing the book and they were trying to capitalize on that, you know, marketing, whatever. But I wonder if they had taken this concept and not told it as a Civil War II story, which then would have removed the kind of expectation for this fisticuffs issue.
Yeah.
And told us this story, this meat, which again, we talked very highly about the first four issues, yeah. right? The kind yeah. of the idea of predictive justice and all of that. Like, that was compelling. But the fact that it became a Civil War story, when really there's no reason for it to have become a Civil War story.
Yeah. No.
You know, like, yes, I get there's a division in the community, but for it to boil down to fighting is just not, I think, where the story that was something that we remarked highly about in those first few issues. Like, oh, we're not just fighting, which was the problem with Civil War I. It just became a brawl very soon. And I wonder if that, you know, if it didn't have that expectation of a Civil War II narrative to kind of bring the heroes and choose your sides and fight, if it would have been a more how the story would have been different and how the event would have been treated differently.
Yeah, like the way it's been received yeah. by fans. If it would have different perspective there as well. I don't know. Let's move into a new comic that just came out. Trinity number 1.
Mm.
Yes. Again, Joey.
What's that?
Huh?
So what's that?
Trinity number 1.
I'll tell you, Steve.
Okay.
Steve, you didn't pick this one up?
No.
What?
Oh, dude.
It was a legitimate question.
I will. What? Just in Steve's defense, when I was putting together the pull list last week, I was like, what the hell is Trinity? And then I looked it up, and obviously it makes 100% sense. But I didn't even know this book was coming out.
Gotta comb through those previews.
I guess. So, Steve, once I tell you the concept, you're going to be like, what?
You about Ready? To cost me it's, money, Joe Bertino.
Yes, yeah. Yes, he is.
It's a comic book that brings together Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman.
Yeah, it's, I know a movie that brought them together, yeah. too. That wasn't so hot. So.
This one is happier. This one is happier.
Boom. Hey! You're going to have to sell me on it a little bit more, Joe.
All right, so, I mean, here's the thing, man. We got this weird Clark Kent and Lois Lane from Earth, wherever they came from. here they are on our Earth now.
I like that. I'm going to use that.
Earth, blah, blah, blah. And now they're on Earth, blah, blah. And basically, Bruce and Wonder Woman decide, you know, we should go visit. And it's about time. We need to see what their deal is and, you know, meet. So Lois Lane hooks them up, and she sets up this kind of dinner date
dinner
for all
party.
Of the dinner party, you know, and that's basically the book. And the three of them just meet, and they talk about, you know, of their heroism and how they bounce off each other and what their old Superman was like and what it's like, what Clark wants to do here. And it's just really interesting. That's basically what the book is. There's not much. At the tail end, there's like a little bit of like, oh, something might be happening. But for the most part, awesome characters portrayed in a pretty effective and pretty interesting light. Talking with each other, with Lois Lane there as well. It's Francis Manapul does the writing and the art. So
I love his art.
Beautiful.
Love his art so much.
Like, it's so beautiful. And we also have the addition of not just the Trinity and Lois Lane, but their son from Earth. What's his name?
John Boy Kent.
Yeah, so it was just totally unexpected. Like I said, I had no idea that this book was happening, and then I picked it up on a whim, and some of these pages are fantastic. There's one image of Batman and Robin that is super ridiculous because it's about Batman in a rainbow costume that is just expertly illustrated and just totally grabs. It's fun, it's light, it's weird, and again, it's a reminder why these characters are so iconic. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you can only have a Trinity book with these characters. You can't have a Trinity book with anybody else. So that they put this out there and that Francis Manapul is on it, I'm glad that I looked it up when I saw the name, because it was one of my favorite books like last week.
Bob, what did you think of it?
The conversation with Diana and Lois, they don't interact enough in books.
Mm-mm.
And when it happens, yeah, and it's as magical as this was, where they discuss where she says, well, I really have my love was for the other Superman. It doesn't translate here. Yeah. And it's just charming. It's so normal and ordinary. It's this farmhouse in the middle of Kansas, and they're just friends, sort of. They're all feeling each other out a little bit. Here's a book where nothing had to happen, and it was action-packed.
Mm-hmm.
Because the words and emotion were just everywhere, and that was really special.
Yeah, and it had a great cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And now I'm really curious about what they're going to do and how these characters are going to come together, because, you know, like we've mentioned, this is a new Superman. This is someone different. And with this rebirth, we're not exactly sure. I mean, I'm not exactly sure what Wonder Woman I'm looking at yet. We're still getting to know this version and who she is and her mm-hmm. story and things like that. Batman, you know, he seems the same.
Yeah, he's always Batman, right?
Batman. I just love when, like, they have that rainbow Batman sequence that Clark tells him about. He just goes, I have no recollection of this.
While wearing, like, a plaid flannel t-shirt. But it was a nice, happy book. And I'm hoping it kind of keeps that same feeling to it, where, you know, we have a lot of the action and the suspense and the danger in the main Superman, main Batman, main Wonder Woman book. It's nice to have that relationship building between these three core characters.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Steve,
and there are those three like double page spreads of the three characters with their look.
Yeah.
And a big kind of iconic pose with them in the foreground, and then like little moments from their story. I'm just like, oh my God, these are beautiful.
Posters.
Three posters. Trinity posters.
Yeah.
And just Wonder Woman has a giant boar on her back. She's just like, I'm Wonder Woman. Ha ha ha. You know, like, I love it. I love it so much.
Yes. Great book overall. I was really happy with it, and I'm hoping number two is just as good.
Yeah. I've never read this much DC in my life.
Gosh, we're about to talk some more about more Batman DC books. So Batman number 7, which kicks off the first rebirth true crossover between issues, Night of the Monster Men. And this is a Gotham City-centered crossover story. So number 7, which is by Steve Orlando and Tom King, with art by Riley Rossmo. And yeah. Steve had texted me before this book comes out, and he's like, should I be reading Batman? I'm like, well, maybe. And it was because of the Riley Rossmo. You really wanted to dive into the book that he's working on.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite comic book artists of probably ever.
What else has he
done? Overall, but he's in my top 10.
Okay. What else has he worked on?
He has worked on Debris. He worked on Green Wake. Rasputin was another one of his. Constantine mm-hmm. was another. He's just got this really cool, stylized, like, scribble style.
Yeah.
And he has a way of the colorists that he works with on his projects. They really know how to both color and almost light his work. There's this very, like, cool cinematic quality to his stuff that it kind of almost reminds me a little bit of, like, old Clive Barker films or books and novels, how I would imagine those would look. And he does the grotesque and the monstrous very well. And that's kind of, that was my deal for wanting to catch up with Batman, because not only did I want to see how he would draw the Batman characters, but he does really, really cool creature work. And that's, you know, exactly what this this crossover event is about. So, like, I want to see him draw Clayface. I want to see him draw Batwoman. I want to see what kind of weird monsters he ends up coming up with. Even his Alfred is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And this has a lot more of kind of the Rasputin look to it than some of his earlier stuff.
Okay.
It's very much in the way that it's colored. He has some stuff that is very sharply colored, a lot more bold. The scribbles and scratches that I had mentioned are much more pronounced in some of his earlier work, where there's, like, actual highlights to some of the, like, the rougher lines in his stuff. Like, they almost looked like just, like, stylized, like, sketchy scribble art kind of stuff, and now it's really refined and the colors are really mm-hmm. tight and sharp. And I mean, even when the water is coming down on certain characters, like, their clothes are dotted
you can
with
see
raindrops.
the splash from the raindrops.
So,
you know, I think this is the first time I've read anything that he's drawn, and mm-hmm. listening to you talk about him and everything, it's like, oh duh, that's why they picked him for this book. This series, this crossover, is about Gotham, Night of a Hurricane, and a bunch of monsters just kind of show up. Which,
nice.
Following what happened in the last issue of Detective Comics, there's a lot of just turmoil within this Bat family. And between the hurricane and between these crazy monsters, there's, like, no sense of control. Everything's very chaotic, and Batman's, like, delegating and working with his teammates and everything, which I loved. I love seeing that kind of Batman. I think it was a great way to kick off kind of what we're going to see from crossovers and Rebirth. And I'm hoping it's more mm-hmm. like these kinds of stories. Steve, did you have any other thoughts about the story itself or anything like that?
I'm looking at the credits, and it's Ivan Placencia.
Okay.
He worked with Rossmo on Rasputin. That's why it has that same kind of colorization to it. In terms of the story, it's cool. Like, I like a giant monster battle. You mm-hmm. know, it's gonna be real hard for me not to be on board with giant grotesque, you know, baby monsters. Aww. in the city.
Giant grotesque baby monsters.
That's what they look like.
Yeah,
that sounds amazing.
They do. They look like little toddlers with, like, gigantic. They look like they drank the gigantism serum that was in that Simpsons episode, the baseball one where Homer's on the company baseball team. Anyway, that some listeners will know what I'm talking about. So I like the togetherness that we have in the team again, and them, you know, working together again, and just like a visual feast, and seeing him draw certain characters. Like, his spoiler looks really good. Mm-hmm. The Batwoman is, like, very angular and Halloweenish in a sense, and just really a good way that if you weren't, if I wasn't reading Batman and I saw this and I looked at a preview for it, it would have been enough to get me to go back and catch up.
Yes.
So, yeah.
The one thing that I'm kind of like, huh, this is odd, is because when I think of giant monsters and who should fight giant monsters, it's not really Batman. Mm-hmm. To me, Batman's more of that detective and figuring out the problem and things like that. Whereas this crossover, you know, starting off with part one and part two with Nightwing number five, I mean, it's very much like trying to contain this grotesque baby monster and then later some like weird, I don't even know how to describe them, Hydra-esque, cut off one head, another one grows back kind of critters.
Right.
Go ahead.
I mean, if you think about it, at least for me, one of the things that I really enjoyed about, I think it was the first issue of Tom King's Batman, was the issue where he's taking care of the plane that's going mm-hmm. down over Gotham, and him and Duke and Alfred are all doing like mathematics and pulley systems and trying to rear the plane up so it doesn't take the brunt of the crash and, you know, and everything. I don't imagine Batman as being somebody that's going to be able to write an entire, you know, airplane.
That's a Superman
by thing. Himself. I know.
Yeah.
Right. Like I know but he's Batman and everything. I know. And I get that. But that was a unique situation mm-hmm. for him to be in. And like you said about, you know, you don't always think of Batman when you think of people fighting monsters and stuff like that. That's when you call in the other people, like the more magic users and the mystics and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So the thing that I do appreciate about Tom King's stuff so far is that he seems to be spearheading some unlikely scenarios for Batman.
Yeah.
Which I think is neat. So, and I loved, just one last thing. I loved what they did with Clayface in this, that they kind of reveal he's been training and he's got this power where he's able to multiply himself and create all these different cops that he can then send around the city and kind of stretch his consciousness and stretch his physical capabilities to, you know, keep everything, keep people into safety and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're giving him a really good opportunity to make good on his wanting to kind of reform and stuff like that. And I think that that's cool that it doesn't, it's continuing throughout this story and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Bob, did you read this?
No, I didn't. I'm looking over Steve's shoulder, and I got to say one thing. Looking at the panels that feature Batwoman,
mm-hmm.
Riley Rossimo should do a Batwoman book.
Mm.
Nice. I can Step of approval right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joey, did you get to it this week?
No, I didn't get to any of the Monster Man stuff.
Hey, that's fine. I'm going to transition real quick into Nightwing number 5, which is the second part of the Night of the Monster Men.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve, did you read this one too?
I did.
Okay. You know, it's just kind of continuing the same story. We get more monsters. They're diving a little bit more into the mystery of it. Who's behind it? What's going on? We're bringing Duke in a little bit more for the background checks and, like, figuring out what's going on behind the scenes. There was one part in here that gave me, like, a little bit of the heebie-jeebies, and that is the Bat Beacon, where every street lamp in Gotham shows a hologram of Batman giving a message to everyone.
Yeah. Wow.
That's weird.
I was like, a little bit Big Brother-esque going on right here.
Very much. Yeah, that creeped me out a little bit too.
I was like, I hope they address this later, because this is, I don't want to say it's like a breach of anyone's privacy because he's not getting into anyone's like information or things like that. But if I'm just sitting there in the middle of a hurricane and there's monsters going around, and all of a sudden all the street lamps show a holographic Batman telling me to calm down, I don't know if I would actually calm down. I would probably be like, oh my gosh, this is real serious because Batman is hologramming here.
Yeah, twist. Everywhere. Batman is the Monster Man. That's the twist.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they try to pull something like that.
Oh, stop.
But this Nightwing issue I thought was really good. You know, some heroics. He's back in Gotham. We still get to see the rest of the Bat family. So it's not just Nightwing. We get some Batwoman. We get some Batman. We get some Duke. Spoilers in it a little bit. I think Orphan is in it a little bit too.
Gotham Girl's in it.
Yes. And that's the big thing because, like I had said, when I think of monsters, I don't think of Batman saving the day. there is a character in Gotham City who has those Superman powers, or Superman-esque yep. powers, and that is Claire, Gotham Girl. So I'm ready to see part three and see how they draw that character, that new character, into the story. And, yeah. you know, just after everything that's happened to her and everything going on that happened in the first six issues of Batman, what kind of hero is she going to be moving forward?
Yeah, I am. I'm really intrigued about her character. The kind of like offset that they put her on when things happened earlier in the Batman book, that the confrontation with, was it Psycho Pirate?
Yeah.
Psycho Pirate?
Yeah, Psycho Pirate had left her
character. Come on.
Yeah. So his powers and stuff have left her in this kind of semi-permanent or very clouded, altered state. And it's affecting her ability to hero, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But in this issue, she becomes like hyper focused, and I think it happens to be that she's around all of these people that are doing all these heroic things, and she inherently from childhood has wanted to be one of these people. And I think that the need to be a hero is kind of brushing away some of the fog for her slowly but surely.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think this is, I hope that this is the makings of a really cool character to add to the Batman universe. But between Duke being a part of the fold, which I love, I like his character a lot. Like, they have him a little bit on the sidelines right now, mm-hmm. but he's handling it. Not only like is he smartly doing things, but he's also handling it with a sort of bat grace, if you will. Because usually you get, why aren't I out there? And blah, blah, blah. And he understands the need to have somebody back at the cave pulling all the levers and doing all the reconnaissance stuff like that, and sending, being the go-between. And I like that he has that respect for his part in this family. I think that's really cool, a cool trait of his character.
Yeah.
So there's some cool stuff happening in the Batman universe right now.
Yeah. And part three of Night of the Monster Men is going to be the next Detective Comics issue. So
yep.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked about that. So our last open discussion book, Steve, you've got a book you want to talk about.
Yes. So I went through all of my trades and all my books and graphic novels and whatever. I alphabetized everything by publisher. And all that stuff is in my bedroom. My bedroom was a wreck. I haven't cleaned it in like, I don't know, three trips to Canada. So it's pretty bad. And I found a book that a good friend of mine, happens to be sitting right next to me, Mr. Bob Ryer, had given to me a while back, called Scary Godmother. And it was published by Sirius. And it's from Jill Thompson, who Bob just informed me earlier is the wife to Brian Azzarello.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
How do you like that? So, parents, people that listen to the show and you are parents, it is Halloween season. If you are not reading or have not read Scary Godmother, I highly recommend it. It is kind of this, it is. It's a presentation that's not unlike the Howtoons series, where it's half comic book and then half kind of instructional activity book. So what you get in here is two really funny holiday-related comics, and then right in the middle, you have a bunch of like how-to crafts and baking, like Halloween treats and stuff like that, making decorations, how to make your own Halloween comic book, mazes, crossroads, coloring books, the whole bit. The very first thing that I thought of within like four pages of reading this book, it's in black and white, was that I wanted to go and grab my colored pencils and immediately just start coloring it in, because it is so made for that. It is so made for that, that if you want to get even two copies of this, have one to keep for regular and then go nuts with the other one, because I'm telling you, eventually I'm going to color this whole damn book. So really, really cool characters. It kind of follows this little girl that if she wakes up on the fright side of her bed and then opens up her closet door, she goes into the scary godmother's land of horrors and vampires. And there's all these crazy, cool characters. There's a werewolf that lives in a hole in his mother's basement. She's a fortune teller gypsy. Mm-hmm. And like, he's kind of a troll on the internet. He complains about everything when he does go out to venture out into the world. He needs to get a job. There's some really funny stuff coming from that character. There's a vampire family that every time that they come over to Scary Godmother's house, she has to first invite them in, and she starts to explain kind of the vampire rules to the audience and to the reader and stuff like that. And it's all done in this like snappy humor that is a little bit Addams Family, a little bit of the Munsters,
a little bit Elvira.
Yeah, a little bit Elvira, a little bit of like Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, even in some of the art and the presentation of the world. Definitely some Nightmare Before Christmas, Tim Burton-ish stuff going around. This came out in 1997, this one. And Jill Thompson is actually going to be at New York City Comic Con for all four days in row M-1 of Artist Alley.
Nice.
And if you walk up with your Scary Godmother book and are holding it and look at Ms. Thompson, she looks rather like Scary Godmother.
She totally does.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. She totally does.
Jill Thompson is a legend, man.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful, wonderful book. I mean, I've only read the one, but I'm really anxious to go over to her spot and see how the series has evolved from, I mean, if I'm reading the 1997 stuff and we're in 2016 and she's still doing this, I can't wait to see what she has at the
table. In all sorts of venues and genres, there are regular children's books. There are regular comic books. I think there was even an animated cartoon
at some point.
I believe so.
They mentioned the Bat 2C in this book. So automatically five stars.
Yeah.
The color art is very nicely done, but there's something about the black and white, as I was deciding what gift to give you, that I just went for the black and white, but it's just so evocative of the period.
It really, really is.
Yeah, it's horror hosts and craziness and old-time monsters.
And the characters are cool, too. Like, they all have their own personalities. They're all funny in their own way.
Look at that face on the little...
Yeah. Like, all the little things that you find in something like The Nightmare Before Christmas, where everything is Halloween themed because every day where they are in the fright side is Halloween. So the entire world is ghouls and goblins and, you know, things that hide under the bed, but they're all friendly. You know, at least the ones that I've met so far. Who knows? Maybe there's some villains later on, but it's a great, great all ages thing, and particularly for the Halloween season. But you get to learn about other stuff too. Like, you actually learn about the history of Valentine's Day, and you learn about the differences of Christmas throughout different places. And then their Halloween Christmas that deals with like an old dragon, the Boogie Legs, and it's really, really cool. Yeah. I highly recommend it if that's your sort of thing.
Two things off of the Jill Thompson book. One, Matt and I every year do All Hallows Read, where we give each other a scary or Halloween or horror book. And, you know, if you do All Hallows Read, where you give someone a Halloween themed book, that could be a good one to do, keeping with the season and everything. And the other thing is Jill Thompson's Wonder Woman, The True Amazon is coming out.
Like, today.
Today. Yes.
Nice.
I just went to check my picture from my comic book guy before he ships everything off. And yes, it is there. It is sealed. I'm excited to read it. Jill Thompson. Oh, gosh. I can't remember what year she worked on Wonder Woman, but she did. It was about the same time as George Perez.
Right. She did. George wrote some. She drew some.
Yes.
And she's definitely in that annual where it's all female creators and George.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So she has a history with the character. She's been working on that character since the 80s. So I'm real excited to see her come back to Wonder Woman, especially after Brian Azzarello went through the character.
It is going to be interesting. It is going to see what her take will be. Is it influenced by the new 52 version, or is it more classic?
Who knows? But I bet we'll be talking about it next week.
There's another Wonder Woman book due out tomorrow as well.
Yeah.
A very expensive one. but it's the 75th anniversary celebration, which has all sorts of stuff in it.
Yeah, doesn't it have like just particular runs of the character?
It has little bits and pieces of everything. We have pinups and mm-hmm. covers and appreciations of the character, little bits of history. From the previews, from previews, it was, I need to own this.
Yeah,
I have to have this. So I, sight unseen, and I think it's a much better gamble than Earth One turned out to be.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I didn't pre-order that, so I'm going to wait to hear what you think of it, and then dive into it. So.
We'll compare notes because I didn't pre-order the Jill Thompson.
Oh,
I'm going to go in the store tomorrow and take a look and more than likely buy it anyway. But it's like, okay, we've just had within the last year two other origin stories
mm-hmm.
with Renee DeLiz's Legend of.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what's going on with Greg and Nicola Scott. So, okay, how many origins do I need? And I'm still, as you are, going through some of the old ones as I just pick up a book.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay. But yeah. It's Jill Thompson, so yeah. I you know, I have to own this and have to have her sign it. And...
Cannot pass it up. So I think that's going to wrap it up for the comics side. Bob, you had some words you wanted to share at the end of this episode.
Yes, I did. People around here have heard me speak a lot about my dad and him buying books for me as I was a sickly little boy and going to the doctors and whatever. But one thing I do want to share... October 2nd of this year would have been my mom's 100th birthday. And the reason I have a penchant for reading books is my mom loved reading, sat me on her lap as a one-year-old, two-year-old, read me picture books, and her habit was to put her finger under the words as she read them aloud. And there's no question that that got me reading at about the age of three. And books were always a part of our house with it, and magazines and newspapers. And there was always a time in the day for that we sat and read. And so all those things that I, whatever I bring to this enterprise of ours, springs directly from my mom. Mm-hmm. And it's her birthday coming this Sunday. I just felt the need to say, hey, you know, thanks, Mom, because wouldn't be here without you.
Mm-hmm. And she did what I recommend parents do all the time, which is just read to your kids.
Yeah.
Fill your house with as many books as you can. Go to the library often. Share your passion for reading. Or if you don't have a passion for reading, help your kid develop that passion. That's the best gift a parent can give to their kid. Is
Amen.
To help them love to read. And so, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm glad to hear a story like that. And you know, my thoughts will be with you and for her on Sunday.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Well, that's going to be it for our episode this week. As always, you can send us comments or questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. We are also on Twitter @talkingcomics. And you can visit talkingcomicbooks.com for all our reviews and news. We have forums as well and so many articles going up. Joey's been heading up the reviews of the site, corralling our great new writers and contributors. So many
great articles coming. Some of them are some Luke Cage stuff is coming. One of our writers, John Burkle, is doing a series on like weird JLA runs that are worth checking out. He's got a third one coming out later this week too. So, you know, not just reviews. There's a lot of great writing going up on the site. So mm-hmm. check it out, Amen. Man.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Joey.
Yes. We also have a ton of podcasts, book clubs, D&D, video games, TV, movie. If you're into something, we probably have a podcast for you. So that's kind of my opinion on it. I was like, we have so many and such a huge variety. Anything you like, I bet we've got it. So, Steve, where can our listeners find you?
You could find me on Twitter or the Instagram @dead_Icarus. I do it for you, man. I do it for you.
And Joey?
You can find me on Twitter @JoeyBurchino.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Bob?
I've taken to using semaphore flags. I stand on the roof and you can get me that way. Bob Ryer, talkingcomicbooks.com.
And I'm on Twitter and Instagram as Mega Maramon. So, for Bob.
Happy birthday, Mom.
Steve.
You're off my Christmas list, Joey.
And Joey.
Adios.
I'm Mara Wood. Until next time, to be continued.